Trainer Talks and Tales acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Turrbal and Yugara people of Meanjin. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Trainer Talks and Tales love having an array of guests with a variety of opinions. However, the views of the individuals do not necessarily reflect the perspectives of the host facilities.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talks and Tales. My name is Tess and we're joined by Daisy. Daisy, how are you going? How's your week?
Hey Tess, I am good, thank you. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode. We're so excited to bring you a really cool conversation today. My week has been a lot of fun. I got to have Tess come to Sea Life, which was heaps of fun. Hey.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, anytime. It was cool to hang out with the seals and for you to watch some of the presentations and stuff too. In regards to my week, it's been pretty normal. I'm heading on holidays soon, so I'm in a little bit of a holiday mode. But I did want to share with you and everyone actually listening, Tess, I came across a really cool article the other day, actually, that was put out there through Animal Welfare Expertise, who is owned by Dr. Isabella Clegg, who we interviewed a couple of our episodes back. So if you haven't listened to that episode, I definitely recommend. She is awesome to listen to and has such a huge wealth of knowledge, and the stuff that she's doing within Zoos and Aquariums is really, really impressive. But it's pretty much just a summary that they put out of a recent paper that was published, and it's actually based on a species called a Tayra. And please tell me if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but it is a type of weasel that's found in Central and South America. So they're looking at that species in a zoo, and they pretty much monitored that animal for about a 12-hour period. And they were looking at different types of behaviors. So we're looking at stereotypical behaviors, inactivity, any aggressive behaviors, feeding-related behaviors that they saw. And then the team went in and did a bit of a development with their nutrition, their environmental, and their enrichment kind of setup that they utilize with that animal. And I just thought it was really interesting to see that their stereotypical behaviors went from 28.8% down to 16.2%, which is cool. And the feed relating behaviors went from 8% all the way up to 28%, which is really interesting. But I just think that's such a cool thing to be put out to show just how impactful that different forms of enrichment can be on a species, and making sure that they are slightly different, and we can see data showing that it makes a huge impact. So if you haven't read that, I definitely recommend just head to Animal Welfare Expertise, and they've done a little bit of a summary on it for everyone.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think we discovered recently just how important data analysis is, and it doesn't have to be overwhelming or boring. It actually just gives you so much important information. So the proof is in the pudding there with those statistics. So that's very cool.
Yeah, 100%. Really, really cool. So definitely recommend. But Tess, how are you? How's your week been?
Yeah, good. As you mentioned, I really enjoyed visiting you yesterday at Sea Life. I felt like it was time to return the favor. I think it was great. I really enjoyed your presentation. I think that obviously we've said that you love presenting, but you just did a really wonderful job. And I also think that there was a really nice balance of conservation, touching on training, and also just the right amount of information, and also having that conservation message too. Being a presenter, there's so many things to hit, and to keep everyone's focus is so hard with our short attention spans these days. But I was really engaged and I really enjoyed it. So thank you for having me and having me meet Mo and that kind of stuff. So it was really fun and I'm very keen to do it again soon.
Oh, thank you. I was saying to the girls before I went out, I'm never nervous. I like put on my power pose like Tim told me to, and I was absolutely like shaking knowing that there was like people I knew in the audience. It changes your whole mentality, and I was like, come on Dave, you've got this. And a couple of dodgy throws, but the seals did a great job.
Nah, you smash it, absolutely smash it. I did have something I was going to bring up. Obviously we love talking about training, we love talking about anything that's coming up. So if you don't already know, the ASZK conference will be coming up in May. So jump on their website if you want to find out a little bit more information about that. It is in WA this year. But also Zoo Spenceful is running an animal training workshop, and it's hosted by Sydney Zoo. So if you are interested in learning a little bit more about emergency recall, cooperative care, training animals in a group, that's a great one to register for. We haven't had Zeus Fanciful on the podcast, but I'm sure we will. If you're listening, we'll send you an email soon. yeah, they're amazing, and we've kind of referenced them a few times. So if you're interested in that, that's another great thing to register. If perhaps you can't make the ASZK one, or you're tossing up what you would like to sign up for, it'd be a great one to do. So I'd be keen, but I got a bit on.
Yeah, definitely. I second all of what you just said. I would love to be heading down to Sydney Zoo. It's definitely on my bucket list to go after we chatted to Dean all about the elephants and stuff that's down there. So hopefully one day, but yeah, unfortunately we won't make this one. But Tess, we do have a really exciting guest on today. So do you want to chat a little bit about who we're interviewing?
Yes, I'm very, very excited. We've been wanting to have Matisse on the podcast for a while, and she is a phenomenal dog trainer. I have so much respect for people who can just do such amazing training with dogs. I think as keepers, we have this amazing relationship with our animals, and we go there to work and we live and breathe it. But sometimes we forget that we do have dogs at home that have these amazing capacities, amazing intelligence and capabilities. But maybe we're so focused on our work animals, we don't realize the capabilities of our own pets. So to see firsthand what Matisse does is just incredible. So if you want to talk dog training, if you want to talk amazing skills and, all about dogs, really, this is the episode for you. So let's get into it. All right. Welcome, Matisse. Thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we were just saying before we started, we've had lots of zookeepers, lots of people in the zoo and aquarium industry. So it's fun to dabble in something else. So let's talk about dog training. But before we do, let's get into our fast five. Are you cool if we start with five fast and furious questions that you answer as soon as possible?
I'm ready.
All right. Number one, autumn or spring?
Spring.
Number two, border collies or kelpies?
Oh, border collies, hands down.
Number three, Facebook or Instagram?
Instagram.
Number four, barbecue dinner or fish and chips?
Oh, fish and chips.
And number five, toothpaste that is not mint flavored. Yes or no?
Absolutely no.
Yeah. Well done.
That's hard.
I think I answered all the same, actually. And I really thought that I would maybe stitch you up with the border collies or kelpies. I thought that you'd be like, oh, I can't say. But you're like, yep, border collies for sure.
Border collies, I've got four of them.
That's so good.
They're the best. And you definitely got Tess in her good books for saying that too.
Good start.
Rivalry. Border collies and kelpies.
I'm just here with my sausage dog and my retriever, like, hello. No idea what training is if you ask them. Anyway, talking about incredible dog training, you are absolutely one. And we'd highly have to start this episode off by recommending your incredible Instagram, which is Fit Dog Family. So if no one has checked that out yet, please go and see it, because we can see all of your incredible videos that you share. But obviously we'd love to know a little bit more about you and kind of how you got into where you are now and what you are actually doing at the moment.
Thank you. So my sort of dog training journey started when I was 14. I got my first ever dog of my own. She was a Kelpie Border Collie mix, best of both worlds. And her temperament was fiery as hell. She was a bit of a naughty little puppy. She had some leash aggression, and, you know, knowing what I know now and looking back, I made so many mistakes with her. Just during her critical period, I didn't expose her to what I should have. So she, had some pretty serious leash reactivity. She would lunge and bark at dogs. And so I had no idea what to do. I was super out of my depth. And so I got enrolled in our local dog training course, just a basic obedience course, to try and help. And that was super, super helpful. Her leash reactivity got a lot better. And I do remember the trainer in week one said to us to teach our dogs a trick. And then at the end of the course, everyone would come and show the tricks that we'd taught. So I sort of went home and I went onto YouTube and searched up dog tricks, and I went down a rabbit hole of just looking at all these amazing border collies doing all these cool tricks. And I found dog sports on YouTube. So looking at like Frisbee and agility. And I was just hooked. I started training my dog straight away, and I sort of haven't stopped ever since. She was my first sports dog, and I've added 4 more since then. And that training course as well, the owner of the company came up to me at the end of the course and just sort of complimented me and said, hey, you've done a really good job with her. Would you like to shadow our trainers and, you know, start to learn some more training things? And, you know, I was 14, so it was my first ever job, and I was so excited. I was stoked. So I joined onto that company and just started shadowing classes, learning a bit more about training, helping with like your family dog training, just basic obedience, as well as some reactivity. So, and food aggression and stuff like that. And that was a really good sort of introduction to the industry. They were positive reinforcement trainers, and they just took me under their wing and really sort of introduced me to everything. So that was awesome. They also had a couple of, you know, pieces of agility equipment at the club. So I tried that out and got even more hooked. And then, you know, sort of went from there. Been competing in dog sports ever since, and I'm absolutely loving it. Have worked in training ever since, and yeah, training's just become a massive part of my life with the dogs that I have and in the professional industry as well.
That's so cool. I love that you started at 14. Like, your trajectory from there is just incredible. Because my next question was like, was dog training something that you've always been interested in? And yeah, since you were 14, so you've really flourished since then.
Absolutely. I was always that kid that, you know, liked dogs. I was a horse kid as well, liked horses, but I'd never really thought of training until that first dog sort of forced me into it. You know, she needed help. And so I sort of had to learn training pretty quickly to be able to help her. The world was a scary place for her. So was sort of forced into it, but I absolutely love it. And I think my dogs are grateful for that as well.
Yeah,
for sure. I also like that you said that you had learned a lot, and like on reflection you could have done things differently. Like, that's training though, isn't it? You're like, okay, well, you know, you do the best that you can at the time, and afterwards you're like, okay, I know how to do this better now. So I'm glad that you said that, because we're always learning, hey.
Absolutely. You know, like every dog that I get, I feel like I know a lot, and you know, I can train them, and then, you know, I get to my next dog and I realize, oh, I could have done all of these things better. And so I just, you know, you get better and better each time around. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a special thing that comes with the training world, is that you're just constantly evolving, as is what we're learning as well. Like, training capabilities and is just changing all the time, which is so fascinating. You mentioned a little bit earlier about running and helping with puppy training classes. Is that difficult to navigate, like with different levels of training, like different people who have different understandings of training as well? Is it hard? Did you struggle at all with breaking it down to sort of layman terms to those people who don't have a training background?
Absolutely. Like, it can be difficult. I've run puppy schools with a couple of different companies, and, you know, we say we're dog trainers, but we're more people trainers. You know, we're training the people to go home and then train their dogs. So it's definitely, you know, a matter of having good communication skills and things like that. And absolutely, people learn in different ways. So having a multitude of different methods that you can use and explaining to people until they get the concept. Puppy school can be a difficult one as well, because there's so much content to cover. And, you know, puppy school is just so important for that critical socialization period. You know, it's so fun, and they've got these puppies and everything's lighthearted and it's great. But it's also, you know, we're trying to convey quite a like serious message about how much work they need to put into these puppies now if they want to have an easy dog to live with when it grows up. So it is a lot of fun teaching the puppy school, but, you know, all dogs, there's always one in every class that just challenges you with, you know, they struggle with something different, and you have to be creative and come up with a new method to teach. So it's always lots of fun.
I can imagine it's difficult. Absolutely. And I imagine it's difficult balancing the whole like, but my heart says like, look how cute they are. And it's like, it's okay if I just reward that like this time. Absolutely. We really have to get into like, no, we're thinking with our head. We have our training brains on, not our heart. Like,
I know. We just want to give them treats for being cute all day long.
And for anyone who's ever been to puppy school, like, it's so hectic. Like the environment is just like puppies, excited people, and like sometimes people bring their kids, and it's chaos. So like kudos to you for like controlling that environment. And my brother actually did his Kelpie's puppy school. Effie, shout out to Effie, my dog okay. niece. her training with you, and he was just so impressed. He was like, the way that Matisse can just have the puppies listen, the humans listen, and just like took control of the class. He was just really impressed with that. So that's a great skill to have, to basically, you know, have the dogs listen and the people listen as well. But how do you navigate that environment, like with so many different trainers? How do you like make sure everyone's like refocusing on you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's difficult, especially like you said, when you throw kids in the mix, that's like a whole different ball game. Like I said, in puppy school, there's so much content to cover. I do find that like having a really clear plan of what I want to cover in that class and having timestamps of when I want to have been done that activity by really helps me. And there is times for sure you do have to be, you know, assertive. If people are just chatting amongst themselves, we need to get stuff done. So there is times, you know, where you do have to take control, like teaching any class. And yeah, it puppies, they're chaotic, but you sort of just got to roll with it. You know, that's half the fun of puppies. They throw random things at you. They're naughty sometimes, but you just got to laugh and just, you know, get along with it. It's a heap of fun.
And I guess you're not just struggling with a variety of different people in the room, but I guess you're also dealing with puppies that are young. So I can imagine they're like young children where their attention span is small. So fitting in enough that you making sure that you're achieving enough in that time, but also keeping sure that they're engaged throughout that whole time as well.
For sure. Giving them, you know, proper breaks, and different breeds have different needs as well. But you know, that's one of the really important skills that I like to teach in puppy class is, you know, just settling. So you can be in a super busy environment like a puppy class and you can do nothing and you can rest. Because for sure, you know, if the class goes for an hour, that's a super long time, way too long for a puppy to be able to focus. And, you know, when that puppy grows up, if we want to take it to places like cafes and things like that, we do need it to be able to switch off and relax in busy environments. So that in itself is a really good skill to teach in puppy school. And so I like to get the owners to start teaching that right from the beginning. And that definitely helps to keep the puppy's attention span if they are getting appropriate rest breaks in between the exercises. So yeah, that's an important thing.
I love that you're saying that, because it's like, it's the same with all animals, right? Like with our seals, the hardest part of all behaviors is just them sitting still.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they like, just, especially when they start to love training, they want to do everything at once. So especially for your higher drive breeds, like your working breeds and your shepherds and things like that, it's a really tough skill that people forget that they have to teach.
Yeah, 100%. Now, one thing I was really, really excited to chat to you about when Tess said that we were having you on was sort of going through whether you've ever struggled and how you navigate talking and teaching people who might be stuck in slightly older ways. I think dog trainers in the past have previously used more of the older training methods, like utilizing punishment, which we obviously don't see and we discourage as much as possible going forward now. How have you had to deal with tackling those people and getting them out of those older mindsets?
Absolutely. It's tricky, especially, you know, in the world of sports, agility to be specific, we're super lucky in that, you know, most people are super positive. You know, they love their dogs. The dogs are part of the family. We want to, you know, have fun with them and be really kind to them. But it was definitely a shock for me when I went into the world of sheep herding, because they definitely still use a lot of those methods. So it's kind of a mindset of, you know, we've always done it this way and it works. You know, to farmers, the dogs are more of a tool rather than a part of their family. So they do use harsher methods, which, you know, for people like me and people who I'm trying to train sheep herding, you know, our dogs are part of our family. We love them. We don't want to use these methods. So it can be really tricky. And I found it hard to find a mentor for sheep herding because, you know, the positive trainers in that world are, you know, few and far between. So it's tricky, but I think just, you know, sticking to your morals of how you want to train your dog, And then just keep searching until you find someone that aligns with that. In some sports, it can be trickier than others. Yeah, I think just, you know, advocating for your dog as well. You know, if I took him to workshops and I got told to do certain things that I wasn't comfortable with, you know, it's hard, but you have to have the confidence to stand up and say, hey, I'm not comfortable with that. I don't want to train my dog like that. Let's come up with another way of doing things. So it's
tricky,
but yeah, you know, we love the dogs, so we've got to stand up for them and protect their confidence as well.
For sure. And like you said, finding a mentor that is using the correct methods or the methods that you want to use as well is just so important. I've even seen it from like years ago, you know, some of the older trainers with working their dogs, they'll just be, you know, they're presence around the dogs, it's all serious, it's all business, and it's a good dog, you know, like it's just one good dog. And then like these days you'll see them and they're like, good dog, and lots of pats and positive reinforcement and that kind of stuff. And yeah, just seeing how that has evolved in the last few years too, from being like a good dog, you know,
like authoritative.
On that, we were actually talking about agility before. Like, your agility videos are just so impressive. What are the steps involved for anyone interested in starting their dog in agility?
Agility is just amazing. I love it. I have loved it for years. I think I will always love it because the dogs have so much fun and it's very much a team sport. So it relies just as much on the handler and your physical position and your training skills as it does on the dog's athletic ability and their brain as well. The best place to start would be to find a trainer. That's, you know, a hard one. There's clubs around and there's private trainers around. Sort of the first things we teach our agility dogs is a reward structure. So primarily in agility, we like to use toy rewards over food for the reason that it builds a lot more speed, and agility is a speed as well as a, you know, consistency game. So teaching the dogs, you know, how to interact with the toy properly, which, you know, sounds simple, but it can be, depending on the dog, it can be a really long process. So teaching a really good retrieve and teaching the dog that the value of the toy is not just in the toy itself, but it's in the interaction between the owner and the toy as well. So it's like a three-part game. So that is what I spend a lot of my time with my puppies doing, just having fun, playing games. Everything in agility is a big game. And that's why the dogs love it so much. We make it fun. We make it fast. We use their favorite toys. And so that, along with the relationship, you know, you have to have a good relationship with the dog to start. That's sort of the two key concepts to begin with. And then, yeah, once the dog hits about 12 to 18 months, you can begin more formal training. So like that's including jumping and things. We like to hold off until the dogs are fully grown until we do that. When I bring puppies home, they start training for agility at 8 weeks. There's so many flatwork games and little pieces of the puzzle that you can start teaching right from the get-go that really, you know, solidifies your foundation. So when you get to the fun, you know, course running stuff, everything just sort of falls into place and the dogs have a really clear understanding of the picture.
So interesting, and it must be so stimulating and enriching for all the dogs as well. Do you recommend that agility work is possible for all breeds of dogs, or do you think it is only targeted at specific kind of breeds?
Absolutely. Any breed can do it. There is some awesome tiny little Chihuahuas and Pomeranians running around the agility course. There's different height categories in agility. So, you know, it's a level playing field. So the smaller dogs aren't up against the Border Collies. But yeah, you know, the Border Collies, the Kelpies, your working dogs, they have the drive, they have the brains. So any dog can do it. But yeah, the working dogs do just go up that level, but there's always exceptions to the rule. Like there's crazy fast little tiny dogs, and I've got some Great Danes enrolled in my foundation agility course, so like it's absolutely any breed. And it's super fun to watch the off-breed dogs come and do it. You know, we see heaps of Border Collies all the time. Like, yes, they're fast, yes, they're amazing, that's cool, but like I love watching the dogs with like the big floppy ears and the droopy face. It's just so much fun. And yeah, absolutely any breed can do it.
I would love to see my like golden retriever. Yeah. Well, my retriever, she has like one brain cell. So I wonder if she would utilize that brain cell to do her agility. The sausage dog, she would be good at it. She's very smart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've just been picturing a Great Dane do it now, and that's all I can think about. circling back, you have a beautiful little puppy, a border collie puppy called Beetle, and I've just been watching his progression. It's just incredible. And you did, you started when he was just a tiny little thing, and the like, he's come so far. Like, I've just been so impressed, and it makes me, I don't know, just reflect on my border collie that's just sitting on the couch and like can just sit and come, and I'm like, oh, okay, I need to do some more stuff.
Wow, they're so smart, very impressive. Sure. He's 8 months now, when I'm super happy with where his training is. He's the dog out of all of my dogs I've put the most effort and most time into him. And of course, you know, like I said before, I know them more than I did with my other dogs now. So I'm excited for him to start, you know, proper agility training in the coming months, you know, when he gets a bit older. But for the moment, I'm really excited about him.
Yeah, that's so exciting. Now, obviously, in Australia, we have all been hooked to the TV show Muster Dogs. You are about to start a new program for City Slicker Dogs to try and get their kind of hand on sheep herding. What is that sort of going to look like? What's that going to entail?
I'm super excited to start sheep herding. So I'm really passionate about enrichment. And I think the best form of enrichment is breed fulfillment. So, you know, the dogs doing what they were originally bred for. You know, border collies and kelpies, they're amazing. Everyone wants them, and we want them in a suburban environment. But, you know, what they were bred for can make them a little bit more difficult to live with at times. You know, they have those herding instincts. They might like to chase cars or herd the kids, things like that. So I've got some sheep, and I'm really looking forward to introducing, you know, some of the more city dogs just to sheep and giving them an outlet for that herding instinct. You know, it's in most of these dogs, and they can be confused if they've never seen sheep. They don't know where to channel it. They herd other dogs, they herd bulls, they herd cars, everything. So I'm excited to give them an outlet. So going to be doing group sessions on that. It's primarily based on like the dog's instincts. And it's not just kelpies and collies, you know, corgis were bred to herd sheep, which I thought was super cute. I've got some German shepherds. I know, tiny little legs running around sheep. They're adorable.
That's so good.
Yeah. Got some shepherds as well, German shepherds. So it is based on instinct. And, you know, to begin with, we really need to do a lot of confidence building for older dogs that have never seen stock. It can be quite scary to be in a pen with sheep. So initially it can be a lot of confidence building and just praising the dog for any interaction. Once we bring out those instincts, we start to put things on a cue. So with herding, it's very much capturing. So all of the behaviors are very natural to the dog. We usually start them in like a round pen, and we do some balance work with them. And that's where we start to teach them their directionals. So clockwise and counterclockwise, we put that on a verbal cue. We need a stop cue, and, you know, a couple of other things, but it's very much just capturing. The dogs do it all naturally. We can just manipulate their environment and manipulate our position to sort of force them to do that, and then pair it with a verbal cue. So it's super fun, and it's really rewarding for me to see dogs, you know, switch on, and they're just so happy and so tired afterwards. I've never seen my dogs be more tired than after a sheep herding session. You know, you could run them for hours and hours and they would not sleep afterwards, but half an hour of herding and they're buggered for the whole day.
Yes. My brother has actually signed up for your program, and I was going to message you after this and find a date to do it too, because I just think, like you said, like there's nothing more rewarding for those breeds that were bred to do that, and it would just be so enriching, so engaging for them. And yeah, I can't wait. So I'm very keen to see my brother's kelpie and yeah, my border collie at work. I think that would just be incredible.
Yeah, it's super cool to watch
Louis the sheep herding dog. I can't wait to see these videos, Tess.
No more just, you know, rounding up me while I'm vacuuming, or you know, me in a wheelie bin. Let's like put this dog to work.
So good.
What a collies, man, I tell you.
They're crazy. So fun.
They're very fun. Yeah. Now, we did have a couple of questions sent in by our listeners. Lots of people are interested in dog training. Like, you know, it's everyone's forte, because most people have a dog. So yeah, we'll jump straight into that. Our very first question is, what is some advice you can share regarding training dogs that are reacting to a stimulus, for example, other dogs?
For sure. And it's a tough one to give advice on, because it very much depends on, you know, the dog's motivator for reacting.
Yeah.
the training approach that we take differs depending on, you know, where that reactivity is coming from. Most of the time it's coming from a place of underconfidence and fear. So definitely finding a good trainer. I know that's a hard one because there's, you know, good and bad trainers out there, but finding a good trainer so that someone can look at it and understand what the dog's motivator for reacting is. Reactivity is a hard one as well because, like, for example, if a dog is fearful of dogs and they are leash reactive, so they're reacting to other dogs on a leash, and they react and we pull them away to try and stop them reacting, we are inadvertently reinforcing it. So the dog is reacting because they want space. We're pulling them away and giving them space. And they're like, sweet, all I have to do to get space is react and I get what I want. So it's like little things like that that are tricky and you do really need to work with a good trainer. It's usually the case of a lot of counter conditioning. So pairing the scary stimulus with a positive reinforcement. So, you know, at an appropriate threshold, marking the dog for looking at the scary thing and rewarding with food or space or toys or whatever the dog wants in that moment. But yeah, definitely seeing a trainer so that someone can look at it and really assess the dog, because every dog is so different and they throw some crazy things into the work sometimes. So yeah, working with someone is definitely the best bet.
Yeah. I'm glad that you touched on counter conditioning as well, because I, in the past, have had a few issues with my dash hound and children. She's never been overly comfortable with children. And I did as much research as I kind of could look into dog training. It's a bit of a new territory for me. And counter conditioning has absolutely helped her quite a lot. She used to bark, you know, she'd see a toddler from the other side of the park. And then we started incorporating treats when she wouldn't react to the child. And she's still got a little bit of a way to go, but she's absolutely improved. So it's been really cool kind of learning about that side of things with your own animals too. And that you can really change. And you're absolutely right. With her, it all came down to fear. She used to shake pee on the floor if she saw a child, and now she's really comfortable getting touched by her children and stuff. But I'm trying to stay aware of her boundaries as well with that too. So yeah, it's really interesting learning.
Yeah, absolutely. Counter conditioning, you know, can be a really slow process, especially if they've had years of history of reacting at things. It can be, you know, a really long process, but it's rewarding when you start to see the dog not be as scared, especially when it's, you know, coming from a place of fear. The world is scary, and to try and help dogs to cope with it better, I think is really rewarding, because they're just confused. Yeah. They just need to realize that these things aren't going to hurt them. So yeah, counter conditioning is amazing and the things that it can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Now our final question, you have kind of touched on a little bit, but it was, do you find that with most of the dogs that you work with, they are primarily reinforced by food or toys or, I guess, tactile or anything else?
Yeah. So it sort of depends what we're training. In general, you know, all dogs can be motivated by food. It is a necessity. So you can definitely build food drive. And having food drive is really great. I've had to build it with Beetle. He did not have great food drive, and it was super frustrating for me because we would just go out and I'd try to do training, but he found the world and other dogs and other people way more exciting than food. So I definitely had to go through a long process with him of building food drive, and, you know, making him work for his food and, you know, making him realize that, hey, this stuff doesn't come for free. You need to work hard for it. But when we get into more of the sport side of things, toy drive does, you know, build the speed. So normally when I'm teaching initial concepts, I'll use food because the dogs can be more thoughtful, and they can, you know, understand the concept using food. And then once I think that the dog has a really clear understanding of the behavior, I will bring in a toy reward to raise arousal and raise speed, and start to proof that in different arousal levels.
I feel like I've seen that in maybe one of your videos where you've used a toy recently,
yeah,
as a reward, and that was so fascinating because I've only ever seen it really with the dogs that find people in the snow that they tend to use toys, and I was like, oh, they really do find it really reinforcing.
They do, and look, you do need to teach it. Like I said before, it's something that we focus on with puppies is building toy drive, and with some breeds it's easier than others. Your working breeds tend to love to tug, or they love a ball or something like that, but you can teach any dog to tug on a toy. It's like any behavior, you can teach it, and you can teach the dog to find value in it, and it is super beneficial. That's not to say, you know, every dog doesn't love to tug, and so there are plenty of people out there training agility with food. It's just rare that they would get the same level of speed with food as they would toys.
I love when you see those videos of like police dogs that have just done something like amazing, like chase this criminal down, done something hectic, and then the policeman's like, good job, and then gives him a little tennis ball. I'm like, they've done something so cool. I love that.
Yeah, the dogs love it. You know, whatever they find reinforcing, we'll use whatever works. There's one dog at Agility who trains with their toy is a sock. just because that is what the dog finds reinforcing. Whatever works.
I think for my dog it would be access to the swimming pool. She'd be like, can I jump in the water? Absolutely, I'll do it. We're done.
Well, Matisse, this has been awesome. I have loved every second of this, and I'm really motivated now to put in a bit more effort with my dog, but also have a little bit more of a deeper think about dog training. I think it's easy for us as zookeepers anyway, marine mammal trainers, we go to work, we work, and we think about training all day, and we come home and we forget that this is all applicable to our pets, you know, like all this stuff. They deserve just as much of our efforts and training focus and mind as our animals at work do. So it's a good reminder to us all. Yeah,
absolutely. I love that animal training is so transferable. Like I had pet rats a couple of years ago, so I made a little agility course and taught them to do agility. I'm planning on training a sheep. I don't know how that's going to go, but it's just, you know, animal training is animal training. Transfer it to anything. So I find it fun to sort of experiment with different species and see how they respond to similar concepts.
Well, you have to promise to put your sheep training on your Instagram because I want to see that too.
I'm not sure how it's going to go, but.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been lots of fun.
Thanks, Matisse. Tess, you absolutely nailed it getting Matisse on the podcast because that was so awesome chatting to her and her sharing all her knowledge and her little journey into where she is now. And I really love hearing from people who work with dogs that really do focus solely on utilizing positive reinforcement. Because like we kind of touched on in the episode, there's definitely sort of a bit of a history with dog trainers being associated with more negative forms of training. So it's really cool to see the shift in that. And especially with an agility, it's super interesting. So I really hope that everyone else really enjoyed that too.
Yeah, I loved it. So I hope you guys did too. Well, thank you so much for listening, guys. We can't wait to share another episode with you next week and hope you enjoy the rest of your week. Bye.
Bye.